وحسينا 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 وحسينا.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Brothers and sisters in Islam, today you have joined us for a show which is going to be for another 10 episodes. We're going to sit here and discuss on a very dynamic and live topic. Light has been shed on this topic before, and many books have been written down, and you would have read about this in different articles. But I'm very happy to have here with me in my studio Brother Salim Yusuf Ali, who shall inform you about this topic and elaborate on how we plan to speak on the rules of the real world. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam.
It's very good to have you in our studio today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for joining us. Before we start, can you elaborate or shed some light on the topic that you have chosen for the discussion, rules of the real world?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين محمد وآله الطاهرين. The topic I've chosen to present over these series of episodes, inshallah, it's rules of the real world, and I'll be talking about this while taking inspiration from the life and martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, because the month of Muharram is soon approaching, and so I thought it would be appropriate to take inspiration from that as well. And what we'll be doing, inshallah, is we'll be talking on a episode by episode basis about different rules of the real world. Now, what do I mean by that? If we look at Islam as a whole, sometimes people tend to think of it in a very narrow perspective, and they think it has to do only with certain things, for example, when somebody is born, when somebody gets married, or when somebody dies. But actually, Islam is a very complete program for all aspects of our lives. And it also has a lot to offer when it comes to the real world. And our guides, the guides that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has sent to us as to give us the guidance from Him, they've actually given us a lot of guidance when it comes to how we should live our lives in the real world. And in fact, they want us to be happy with our lives. They've given us specific guidelines for how to be happy in our lifetimes. Now, the only thing, if we look at the reality of the situation, is that we have a lot of believers, we have a lot of Muslims, but they're not always happy. And why is it that they're not happy? They should be happy if they are following Islam and they're aware of all that Islam has to offer. So the problem lies in the fact that they're not aware of the rules of the real world. If their expectations were aligned with the reality of the situation, then they would certainly benefit from this program and these instructions that the guides have given to us, and they would therefore be happier. So what we'll be doing, inshallah, is we'll be talking about the different rules and how it is that the Ahlul Bayt, the guides, explain them as a means for us to learn them, apply them, believe them, and in that way we can improve the quality of our lives.
Okay. First question that comes to mind after listening to what you had to say, how do you define the real world? It's like, what do you call the real world? Like, what comes to my mind when you talk about the real world or the world is like the world we live in right now, where we wake up every morning, sun rises, we go to work, kids go to school, and life goes on as usual, and then evening and the night time, and we hit the sack. Mm-hmm. So this is the regular routine we have. The real world that you have in your mind, which obviously has to do with the role of Imam Hussein and the effect it has on our lives, and the role that the belief in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala plays in our lives, is obviously something deeper. Mm-hmm. In meaning. Mm-hmm. So will you please elaborate for myself and the people watching here? Sure.
That how do you define the real world?
Okay.
When I say the real world, I'm actually translating the Arabic word, which is dunya, the dunya. And I think a lot of people are familiar with that word. They've heard it before. And this is a word that has actually been used with different meanings. When we look at the traditions, the narrations from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam on the topic, people typically tend to have an understanding of the dunya. They look at the dunya versus the akhirah, the world, the present world versus the hereafter. And they tend to define the world in a simplistic way. They say that, okay, the world is anything to do with my life until my death. And it has to do with the way that I operate in this physical universe where I've been born into and which I will eventually pass away. The akhirah, in the simplistic understanding, begins when?
After a person is dead.
After they die. Exactly, after they pass away. And as I said, it's not the case that that isn't correct. No, in some cases, we find traditions, for example, where that's what it means. But the more general and more deeper understanding of this term requires a little bit more analysis. In order to arrive at a conclusion in that respect, I'd like to look at a verse from the Quran, which is a verse from Surah Rum, verse number 7. And I'm wondering if you don't mind actually reciting that verse for us.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يعلمون ظاهرا من الحياة الدنيا وهم عن الآخرة هم غافلون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
Awesome, thank you very much. So if you look at this verse right here, it's talking about most of the people. It's the context is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is describing the attitude and the belief and practice that most of the people in the world have. And it says that يَعْلَمُونَ ظَاهِرًا مِنَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا, meaning that the knowledge that they have is a very surface level knowledge of الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. Now الْحَيَاة means what?
The life.
The life. Now what is the relationship between in this Arabic ayah that we have here, in terms of the Arabic language, what is the relationship between the word الْحَيَاةِ and الدُّنْيَا?
Dunya is a sifa for the haya, which is an adjective.
An adjective, haya. Right? So the dunya is being used here as a way, as describing a type of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not saying the life of the dunya. It's saying the life and the type, which is a dunya type of life.
Okay.
And dunya in Arabic, if you look at the literal meaning of the word, means low.
Okay. It's a fashion of living. It's how you live.
A mode of living, exactly. So somebody who... What Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is telling us is that most people, when they live a very inferior type of life. And that's the life of the dunya. It's a life which involves a very outward outward interaction with things as they go along in their life.
Right.
Now the verse continues to say what? It says, وَهُمْ عَنِ الْآخِرَةِ هُمْ غَافِلُونَ. Meaning that they, when it comes to the akhirah, they are heedless. They are unaware of the akhirah. Now, let's look at it from a logical perspective. Here we have al-haya al-dunya, the life which is the low, the inferior surface level life.
Yes.
So that leaves us with another type of life, which is what? Al-haya
al-akhirah.
Al-ulya.
Al-hayat al-ulya.
Al-ulya, which is the higher type of life, the superior type of life. And if we look at it from a logical perspective, that is equivalent to the akhirah. Because the verse is talking about the akhirah. It's saying that they are unaware of
the akhirah. From their akhirah.
Exactly. So their being ghafil or unaware of the akhirah is the same as their being unaware of this superior type of life, which is a way of life that involves an interaction with things which is ukhrawi, not dunyawi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what we need to understand then is what does it mean? Like, what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is telling us is that actually the akhirah isn't something that begins after you die, but... It's where?
It's a more refined form of how you live
of
in
how
this
live
world.
In this world, exactly.
This world.
Somebody who has a life which is deep, a deep life, a life which goes beyond the zahir, beyond the apparent.
Which comes out of your animalistic behavior, which is out of your normal animal routine.
Exactly. Something that goes deeper than just the way that an animal would live his life, for example. That person is actually experiencing the akhirah right here and now. And from that we come to the understanding that the akhirah is actually something that exists here and now, and it's with us. But the problem is that most people are not aware of it. Why do you think most people aren't aware of it?
First of all, which comes to mind is when the word akhirah is mentioned, what comes to mind is that akhirah comes from akhir. It's like something which is at the natija of something, or the end of something, mm-hmm. which shows from the word. But after what you mentioned, I understand that akhirah means as a later opinion, or a later mode, or a superior state. You know, when you have awwal and akhir, it's like the first and the last. It's not necessarily the last in numerical, as in numerically last, as in 10 or the last one. Mm-hmm. But a more refined version, or a better version of what comes to mind.
Exactly. And yes. The thing is, though, that most people are not aware of it. Okay, meaning that when people leave their lives, like they see things in a very surface level manner.
They
right?
perceive the way they see it, very simply.
Yeah, yes. It's basically them and that thing. Okay, let's take an example. Suppose that you're hungry. All right, it's like lunchtime, and you have a plate of food that's in front of you. Mm-hmm. It's a very sumptuous looking dish, right? What is right now? What is in the picture? In a typical example, right? What are the actors in this situation here? You have you, and you have the food,
yeah,
right? And you have your hunger. And so what you're going to do is you're going to go about eating that food, diminish your hunger, right? And it's just you and that food. That is a very surface level interaction with that food. That's what we call the dunya.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just you and that food. What's missing from the picture? What do you think?
There has to be a deeper meaning to your action.
So what is the deeper meaning? The deeper meaning is that, wait a minute, that food didn't come from me, and even my life and my existence didn't come from me as well too.
Yes.
But rather, I'm here for a purpose, and there's some expectations of me when I'm here, and that is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the one who brought me here, and He has given me some commands. So I have some responsibility.
Very good.
And that food is not something that came independently,
It just didn't happen to be there.
It didn't just happen to be. And it's not something that I brought into existence, but rather I was given that food from a higher being.
Very true. Sorry to interrupt you there. Some of the ulama, when they talk about in their theological books or their philosophical texts as well, and they mention the point that it's more like a das story, but it's very interesting when it comes. It's like if a man comes to you every day and he gives you $5, for instance, and he walks off. And you just look at the $5, and the first 2 days maybe you just put it in your pocket, and the third day if he comes up to you, it's like another $5. There comes a time where you wonder, it's like, where does this money keep coming from? You know, mm-hmm. Where do I get this money? It's mm-hmm. like this relationship that I have with this man, or... Mm-hmm. Who is this man?
Exactly.
Where does the money come from? So when you're sitting with the food, as you mentioned,
yeah.
You obviously, it comes to your mind that the food's there, I'm here, mm-hmm. There has to be a purpose. Not only just eating the food and
exactly.
just walking off.
There's something deeper. Something's expected of me. I'm not just like a kid who's given, you know, on one day you give him a lollipop, he'll eat a lollipop. The next day you give him a lollipop, he'll eat a lollipop. And that's it. It's them and the lollipops and their enjoyment. No, there's something deeper that I understand as a result of my maturity, as a result of thinking. And the example that you give is very valid as well, too. Exactly. That person will start to think.
Like, why are you giving me this?
What do you want me to do?
Exactly.
Now, when I look at that food and I say that, okay, well, I have hunger, but I have a purpose in life, which is that I need to serve Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I have responsibilities. I have worship to perform. I have duties to fulfill when it comes to my family, when it comes to my friends, when it comes to the society at large. In order to fulfill those duties, I need energy. And if I keep on this state of hunger, I'm gonna become weak and I'll fall down. So as a way, there's a purpose for why I'm eating that food, which is that to serve Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So now, who's in this scenario here? Like, who are the actors? Who are the people involved here? There's me, there's a food, but there's also Allah
subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So you see here that the interaction that I'm having here is a deeper interaction. It goes beyond the surface level.
And then now you have a meaning to do everything you do. That is, you do.
Exactly.
For instance, if you act upon something, or which you react upon to something, so you have this intention of doing it for reasons of pleasing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, or you know, from the fear of hellfire, whatever reason that is. But now you have motivation to act. It's not just daily routine, but it's scheduled, and it's it's now a system that you're following. It's
right.
systematic.
There's some
it's very
thought
systematic.
Behind it. Exactly.
Exactly.
A lot of people tend to go about their daily life in an autopilot mode. They just go from one thing to another, and there's not that much thought and meaning behind the interactions that they have. And if you look at the schedule of things that they have in the day, it's a schedule filled with all these different sort of things that they have to do, from, you know, attending to their personal affairs, to like working, to studying, to entertaining and socializing. It's all a bunch of different one like sort of interactions where it's me and that thing, me and that thing.
Nowadays, when you speak to people and you listen to them, they have to say it's like, we do what we feel we should do. We do what we want to do. You have to listen to your inner self and you act accordingly. But when you look at their lives, you know, if you just look, you have a bird's eye view and you look at them, whatever they do is pretty habitual. It's like they just do the same thing over and over and over again. And when you speak to them, it's like, we do what we want to do.
Right.
Like, and we have free will, and we're supposed to act freely, and we're from a free place, or we believe in a free government, a free rule and everything. Mm-hmm. But everything they do, if you just take a step back and you look at their lives, mm-hmm. they're just like, you know, robots doing something over and over again.
It's a life filled with havoc. It's a life where they're just running from one thing to another, and at the end of the day, they come out of it, they've done all these different things, but there's no meaning.
Exactly.
Like they're just searching for meaning. And what is the problem? The problem isn't that they're not, it's not like that they need to add one more thing. No, they already have enough things on their plate. But rather, when it comes to what everything that they're doing, they need to try to search for deeper meaning behind that. If we establish a dunya relationship, a very low-level relationship with the different things that we do in our life, in our daily routine, where there's no God in the picture, then at the end of the day, we won't feel fulfilled because we were created for something higher. Mm-hmm. But if we establish the ukhrawi relationship with it, meaning that we have God in the picture, everything that we do when it comes to how we start, how we interact with it, how much we take from it, at the end of the day, what do we say, what do we do, God is in mind in all of that, then we will be satisfied with that interaction because we'll be actually benefiting from it.
We have a goal we're moving towards.
It will, yeah, that interaction itself will be a way to push us towards that goal that you're talking about. For example, let's take that plate of food that we were discussing. At the beginning of it, I had God in mind. Even when I'm eating, I have in mind that, okay, this is something I'm doing for a purpose. It's not just, and the purpose is a godly purpose. It's not satisfying my own desire for food, even though I'm enjoying it while I'm eating it, because I'm a human being after all. I do enjoy good food. So because I have that godly purpose in mind, I eat only to the extent which is necessary. Meaning that before I stuff myself and I add one more thing on top, to like add to the, you know, just to get that last bit of taste out of the food, I pause, I wait, and I say that, okay, how much do I really need? And I look at the guidance, the traditions from the Ahlul Bayt on this topic, and I see how much they've told me to eat. And that's when I stop. And when I stop, then I'll thank God for that blessing that He's given me in the form of this food right here.
God just encircles or envelops everything or every act you do, and it gives meaning to how you act or how you react to different situations.
Exactly. Now, the interesting thing that we've kind of been touching on through our discussion so far is that, you see, Islam is not saying that the dunya is the material world in and of itself, but rather it's saying it's the way that you interact with the material world. And Islam is saying that if you want to see God, you want to achieve your goal of attaining perfection in this world, then you have to interact with the material world. It's not that you should extract yourself from it, go off into the wilderness somewhere and just be with you and God. No, it's you, God, and the dunya, meaning the physical world around
the
you.
The playground you have in front of you, you have to interact with every other toy, turn this over, turn that over. Enjoy your time while you're here,
yes,
and have God with you, with everything you do.
Exactly, exactly. Let's look at some traditions from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam where they talk about the dunya, and we can see this kind of in some practical examples. One tradition we have is from our sixth Imam, Imam Ja'far As-Sadiq alayhi salam. And he says, مَثَلُ الدُّنْيَا كَمَثَلِ مَاءِ الْبَحْرِ كُلَّمَا شَرِبَ مِنْهُ الْعَطْشَانِ اِزْدَادَ عَطْشًا حَتَّى يَقْتُلَهُ. Meaning that the likeness of this world is the water of the sea. That however much a thirsty person drinks from it, his thirst only increases. Now, can you tell me why is it that a thirsty person will not be satiated from the water of an ocean, the ocean water? What's wrong with him?
It's because from what comes to mind after reading this hadith from the Imam is that when this thirsty person is drinking this water to...
The salt water, right?
Yes. It's not only to... He's trying to quench his thirst.
Yes.
But this is not the water which is meant to be had to quench
exactly.
your thirst.
Because when you have salt, it only makes you...
More thirsty. Exactly, right? Yes.
So you're looking for something and you think it's there and you're saying, okay, this is what I need to satisfy my need. But you take it and it's like, wait, I'm still thirsty.
It's like a mirage. You're running after something which doesn't exist.
Exactly. And the worst thing is that the more you run after it, the more you want to run after it. And the more you need to run after it. Now, what is it that the Imam is speaking about here? Is he talking about any sort of material interaction that you have? For example, okay, based on this hadith, should I now leave aside eating any tasty food? Should I leave aside having any friends? Enjoying myself? Getting married? Or any of these type of interactions with the physical world? Is that what he's saying here?
No, that would be totally un-Islamic. You know, the Islamic teaching we have is not to leave this world and go away.
Exactly.
Or be a hermit for the rest of your life. Right. But what Islam portrays or wants us to understand is that you have to live in this world because we have given you this world. Mm-hmm. And so that you can use it to the maximum for your... This world shall be your road to your akhirah.
But what is the key though? The key is that what? When you interact with it, it should be
for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
And God should be there with you as well too. Meaning right. that everything, that the basis on which you interact with it should be God. In that case, it's not the dunya. And we see that being given to us in a very clear teaching from another tradition from the sixth Imam. One time this one man comes to him, one of his companions, and he says that, Wallahi, inna lanatlubu dunya wa nuhibbu an nu'taha. He says that he's like disappointed in himself. He's like sad. He says that, oh Imam, he confesses. He says that, by God, we love the dunya. We like to go after it. And we like to get things from it. Now the Imam knows the companion. And he knows that you know, he's a good person and everything. And he wants to console him. So he says that, فَقَالَ تُحَبُّ أَن تَصْنَعَ بِهَا مَاذَا. Like, what do you want to do from this world? Exactly. So the Imam, this person says that, قَالَ أَعُوذُ بِهَا عَلَى نَفْسِي وَعِيَالِي وَأَصِلُ بِهَا وَتَصَدَّقُ بِهَا وَأَحُجُّ وَأَعْتَمِرُ. He says that, well, with that, what I get from the dunya, I support myself and my family, I create ties with my kin, my family, and I give charity with it, and I go for hajj, I go for umrah with these funds, and that's what I love to get. So the Imam at that point tells him, alayhi salam, لَيْسَ هَذَا طَلَبَ الدُّنْيَا هَذَا طَلَبُ الْآخِرَةِ. Meaning that what? This is not the... But you're not going after the dunya here. Don't get it wrong here. You're going after the hereafter. Meaning that interaction that you have with the physical world, it's okay. That's part of being a Muslim. It's part of getting to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And in fact, that's not the dunya. That the interaction that you're having there is a meaningful interaction. Meaning that it's leading you towards this higher type of life that God is asking us to go towards.
I have a question here, and there are many questions to follow, inshallah. But we are out of time for this session.
Okay.
I thank you very much, and I'm very glad you gave us time from a pressured time and join us. Inshallah, later on, may Allah bless you with more knowledge, so that you may shed some light upon us as well, and then we can benefit from your knowledge. But you understand what you learn, and obviously the audience who've been here, I thank them very much for their time to be with us. To really understand the meaning of the world, the real world, their motives, their objectives, and what they're supposed to do. Till next time then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. وحسينا 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 وحسينا